Shalom, everybody, and today we are studying Parashat Vayichi, the last parasha of the book of Genesis, Bereshit. You can find it in the Torah, the book of Genesis, chapter 46, 7, verse 28. Okay, so this is a very unique parasha because it seals the whole book of Genesis. It is completing one stage of our yearly connection, or let's say a journey of Tikkun. And that means that we have to understand again that on Rosh Hashanah, we, humanity, we get another round, another chance, another opportunity. We get another circle. Shana, a year in Hebrew, means also repeated, means also studied, learned. It means also changed. It's all the way we have to approach at every year and year that is passing in our lives, as this is a cycle, this is an opportunity for change, for study, for learning, and for growth. And every time we start the year, we need to read the book of Bereshit, Genesis, because this is a very essential idea. We have to update. We have to update our operational system. And that means when we read the story of Abraham and Sarah, Isaac and Rivka, Yaakov and Leah and Rachel, and the 12 tribes, and especially Yehuda and Yosef, we are uploading what we call the operational system, the original, the essential operational system into our life, updated to the current year, updated to the current tikkun. So let us see what is about this parasha, Vayichi. And Vayichi means, and he lived, about Jacob. But the parasha, the topic of the parasha, that is the last, the basically the departure of Jacob. So we had that already before with Parashat Chayei Sarah, the life of Sarah, that the parasha is speaking about her death. And we have a very similar understanding, and we have an additional understanding. The understanding with Sarah was that she basically lived a double life, because it says she, the lives of Sarah, and it repeats again and again in the same verse, life in plural. And we are talking about, and she's buried in the cave of Machpelah, and Yaakov is also buried in the Machpelah, which means we are talking about people with chariots. Chariot, it means they knew how to combine, to merge the spiritual universe and the physical universe. That is very, very important, because we spoke about it last week. It is the understanding this concept will help us to understand the tough days we are headed into, which means the days of collision, of civilization in collision, the clash of civilizations. What we're talking about, the perception of the universe as a physical reality, this is supposed to crash into the concept of a dual perception, a universe that has two sides, like a human being. A human being has a physical side, the body, and with all its intricate structures, and the soul. Without understanding the soul, you cannot understand the body. Without understanding the metaphysical dimension of this universe, you will never be able to understand the physical aspect, not psychology, not physics, nothing. Okay, so let's see how is this connected over here. First of all, so we have three things we want to realize in this parasha. One, the Zohar begins with the question, Vayichi Yaakov, and the Zohar is asking, how come Jacob, and that is a very important concept, Jacob arrived to a level of prophecy like no one before him since Adam arrived to. Only Moses arrived to that level afterwards, and no one after Moses. So we have two people, Jacob and Moses, arriving to the level of prophecy, which is called the shining mirror, which means like the being able to see stuff as is, which means when we're talking about seeing the future, both had that kind of an ability. And the Zohar is asking the question, how could that happen just in Egypt? And well, Egypt is considered to be the lowest place energy-wise in the world. Egypt full of witchcraft and idol worshiping, especially Egypt of those days, there was nothing more low, more negative than Egypt of those days. So how do we explain that? And the Zohar said, so that's one question. The other question is, why do we call Yaakov, Jacob, and he lived? Well, basically, it's about death. That's another idea. In the simple text context, that we call him today Yaakov Avinu, which means in Hebrew, basically, everybody who's speaking Hebrew is calling Yaakov, Jacob, Yaakov Avinu. Yaakov, our father, not the patriarch. Patriarch is something remote, the patriarch of what? But Hebrew speakers say Yaakov Avinu, Jacob, our father. Why? How can, this is a closeness that with somebody that passed on something like 38, 37 centuries ago. Well, what are we talking about? How did Yaakov arrive to that level? You know, it's also Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. We call them Avinu, our father. And when we are talking about the mothers, Imenu, our mother, not the matriarch. That's not Hebrew. The matriarch is something remote. Okay, that's a matriarch. What do I mean a matriarch? Okay, this is, it's not even English. It is Latin. Okay. So that's the other question, which means what is the secret of living for so many thousands of years and still being alive in millions and maybe billions of people's minds, thoughts, and hearts, which is the secret of immortal survival, immortal existence. Okay, and the third thing, maybe the most important for many of us, we have a verse, a very important verse over here, that Jacob, before he passes on, he gathers his sons. And he says something like this. Well, I'm talking about chapter 49, verse 1. Vayika Yaakov el banav, and Jacob calls his sons. Vayomer ha'asfu v'agid alachem, gather, and I will tell you et asher yikra etchem b'acharit hayamim. I'll tell you what will happen to you at the end of the days. And then we continue to read, and we have blessings that Jacob is blessing his children. We don't see any prophecies about the end of days. So the Talmud is trying to give an explanation. Rashi is giving a summary of that idea. Bikesh legalot et haketz, Jacob wanted to reveal the end of days. Venistalka mimeno shechina, and the shechina, the divine presence, just moved away from him. So he started to say, v'itchil lomar dvarim acharim, so he started to say other things. Okay, just blessings. What is happening over here? And the Zohar is saying, no, he did. He did give us all what he wanted to give us, all the secret of the end of days. So let us see the three things we really want to understand from this parasha. Okay, so we start with the first question. The first question was, how could Jacob and Moses arrive to a level of prophecy, the highest of that any human being reached ever in history? How did they arrive to that level of prophecy? And it happened in Egypt. And the Zohar is saying, and we'll do it shortly because we want to go to the last one. Perush, Rabbi Ashlag is saying, first we'll read the original Zohar, Vayichi Yaakov, that's Hasulam, Zohar Sulam, verse 1. Vayichi Yaakov Eretz Mitzrayim 17 Shana, Amar Biyosi, Liba Chama Binvoa Bemitzrayim, Deyon Benoi Bekama Galavan, Ad Hacha Vead Idana Dekets Meshicha. Jacob saw in prophecy in Egypt that his sons are going to go into few exiles. He saw all the exiles that his children were supposed to go through. Till now, until the end, until the time of the arrival of the Messiah. That's what the Zohar is saying. Ve'lo higia Yaakov l'anvoah shel Vayechi, and Jacob did not reach that level of prophecy, but ela b'Mitzrayim, but in Egypt. V'nevuah chashuvah, this is a very high level prophecy, as we said. Sh'lo itnabu k'motah ve'lo higia l'shum ish mibnei ha'nevim. None of the other prophets arrived to that level. Ela lo le'Moshe bilvad, but him and Moses alone. Ve'Moshe katuv ki lo harani Adam v'chai. It says about Moses that the human being cannot see me and live. And Jacob, it says, and Jacob lived. In that context, it means that living is a prophecy, says the Zohar, that is descending from the shining mirror, which is Sefirat Tiferet. Rabbi Ashlag explains, Hearat HaChokhmah, the illumination of the level that is called Chokhmah, wisdom, is called Chaim, life. So we're not talking about and he lived. We are talking about that the Torah is giving us over here a very important information. Jacob arrived to the level of Chaim, Chaya, in Egypt. Which level is that? A human being is born with the level of Nefesh. Nefesh is the level of the physical existence. Animals, they also have Nefesh. Humans can have a higher level of Nefesh, but Nefesh is about survival. Survival, the desire to survive, to live, to basically exist. And existing means also bringing children to the world. That's Nefesh. Ruach is the second level. This is the level that is when a person realizes that life is not about survival, life is about being all the time on alert, readiness for the spiritual challenges, realizing that every challenge, every hardship, every difficulty is a gateway for a spiritual growth. And a spiritual growth means realizing that life is much bigger than just what the body experiences. That is called Ruach. This is level two. Level three is called Neshama. I'm not translating into English because there are no words for that in English. Oh, we can assume that Ruach is spirit and Neshama is soul. It doesn't English was not created for that purpose, so we cannot. It's wrong to translate. There's nefesh, the lowest, ruach, and then comes neshama. Neshama is much larger scale. When it's not just on a personal level, it's when it's in a bigger scale than that. But there's a fourth level from the bottom, which is called chaya. That level is above neshama. Only two people arrive to that level, Yaakov and Moses. So that's what we're talking about. At that level, which is the level of the prophecy of these two, is called the prophecy of the shining mirror. What does it mean? The other prophets, they had prophecy, but their level of prophecy was from lower frequencies. So what they saw was more like I don't know if anyone learns some kind of magic, but there are people reading the future from coffee. You know, how do you do that? You're making black coffee, okay? You're making black coffee, and you drink it, you put your thoughts and emotions into it. When there's only some mud left in the at the bottom, you don't filter it. You make black coffee, you just put the coffee inside the mug, okay? And you drink and you put your thoughts and emotions into the drinking. And when it's just mud with a little bit of liquid coffee, you start to shake the cup. And after you shake it, you turn it upside down, you put it on the saucer, and you let it dry up. And after it dries up, you turn it over and you look and you see all kinds of shapes. And you look at the shapes, and from the shapes, you're supposed to see visions. Okay? This is similar to what the Zohar is talking about, the prophecy. The prophets, they saw shapes, they saw icons, they saw all kinds of imaginations. And they, from those shapes, they realize what it says in Ezekiel. What do you see? I see a blooming almond tree. Okay, what does that mean? And a whole prophecy coming out of it. What do you see? I see a pot. What do you see? Okay, so we have those kind of visions of shapes, 3D, two dimensional shapes, in which the prophet will be able to see beyond it. So when we talk about Nostradamus, for instance, who was the prophet of, I think it was the 16th century, he was a grandchild of a Kabbalist. You know, that was time of Inquisition, and in Spain and France, Jews were not allowed to live, and most of them were forced to convert into Christianity. So he was, how was Nostradamus, the most famous prophet of Western Europe in the last few centuries? How did he prophesize? He looked at the oil on water and the shapes that came out, and from the shapes he will see visions. How did Jacob and Moses see? They saw like we watch TV, but 3D. That's called the shining mirror. It's like watching at what we call TV, or the screen of a computer or a smartphone, and you see a story. You see exactly what's happening. It's not imagination. You simply see that. Okay? How come, again, the question, how did they reach such a high level of clairvoyance prophecy? On a level that nobody else experienced, they arrived to it in Egypt. And what does it mean in Egypt? Jacob had to run away. He ran away from his brother who wanted to kill him. He had to run away from his uncle and his father-in-law. To say the same person was his uncle and father who wanted to kill him. And then again, he was almost killed by his brother. Then he had to run away from Shechem. Moses ran away from Pharaoh, wanted to kill him. That's called, the Zohar is called Ahuraim, backwards, the back. When you see God from the back, like you feel that God has turned his back to you, and you still work effortlessly over Emunah, your connection, your unconditional connection to God, feeling the creation, the creator, connecting them with every part of your soul, with every cell of your body. Out of those difficulties, when your life is at a constant threat, when your mere survival is threatened ongoingly, and you still stay in constant connection with the presence of the Creator, although your senses, your emotions show you that God has turned his back to you. This is the condition to achieve such a connection in which you can see the past, the presence, the present, and the future like a vision, like you see 3D with color, with sound, and you can look all around the universe, above time, above space, and just know what's going on. Only when we overcome the emotions of fear, horror, anxiety, anger, all those emotions of negativity that are being produced by our animalistic brain, by our nefesh. I have to survive. I need to fight. I need to go into a flight. I need to freeze and make myself dead. That's what animals go. We have to face the animal within us, the nefesh, the body consciousness, the physical perception of reality. And we always have to transcend above it, realizing that every event of that nature of threat, pain, negativity, feeling that God has left us, every time we feel that and we overcome and we reconnect, that is our purpose as human beings. And that's why we need to go down in order to soar up to the heavens. We have to face the hardships. We cannot run away. Of course, you can run away, and then it will, run after you, because basically the calling of our soul is reaching that clairvoyance, that ability to be beyond the body limitation, because this is what we're here for. Yes, God gave it to us as we were created, but we cannot receive that for free. We have to achieve that by own merit, by own work. And that is the daily work, year after year, day after day, hour after hour. This has to be the consciousness. And Jacob, who went through the biggest hardships that anybody else went through, and he still stayed with such a great connection to the Creator, and therefore he arrived to that level of realizing that everything is good, and is being able to see that. And that's why it says 17 years. Why do we care how many years? But 17 is a code word. 17 is in numerical value, tov, good. It was all good. So that's one thing. And the second thing is about the immortality of Jacob. And here we read in the same story that the first thing we hear about is that Jacob is inviting Joseph and his two sons, Ephraim and Manasseh, to be blessed by him. And the most important words that he's saying to them is, those eternal worlds where it says, okay, sorry about that. Chapter 48, verse 20. Vayvarchem b'yom ahu. He blesses them, and there's a whole list of blessings that he's blessing them. And he's blessing them on that day, saying, Lemor, Becha yevarech Israel Lemor. With you, Israel will bless you, saying, Yesimcha Elohim Kephaim v'Chimnashe. God will put you like Ephraim and like Menashe. These words, basically, they are the completion of the blessings. Hamalach, let's see, verse 16, chapter 48. Hamalach ha-goel oti mikolah, the angel that redeems me from all evil. Yevarech et ha'narim will bless the boys. V'yikare b'hem shmi v'shem avotai, and my name and the name of my fathers, Abraham and Isaac, Abraham and Yitzchak, will be called after them. In every Jewish household for thousands of years, Friday night or holidays after the kiddush, just before the meal has started, after the blessing of the wine, the father of the family gathers all the little ones and he blesses them with the same words, exactly, word by word, the same language in Hebrew, the same language that Jacob blessed his grandchildren. He is now blessing again, and that is for thousands of years. If you understand what strength is, what legacy is, along these years, empires rose, fell, and disappeared, leaving only ashes, destructions, maybe some stones, buildings, but they're gone. There's nothing. Here we're talking about a legacy that was stronger than all of them together. It lived them out, lived them through. And still to till today, you have Jewish parents blessing their children in the same words exactly, to show that the legacy, the lineage, the connection, the spiritual message lives on. From all of those empires, many of them set a goal to annihilate, destroy, remove the Jewish nation from the face of the earth. Some of them did not want to remove, just to convert, change, take over, replace. They're gone. Most of them are gone, and some of them are on the way to be gone. And we see those words still alive in the same words exactly. And it's not just the words, it's a legacy behind it. It's the gift behind it to shine to the world, to shine the hopefulness message of the human rights for happiness, the human right for success, growth, for control over its own self-destiny, for taking responsibility for its own self-destiny. The world is changing rapidly, but the vision is still alive, as Jacob is instilling the vision of his father and his father's father into his grandsons, and that goes on till today. Same language, the same people. And that is strength that is stronger than bigger, the biggest armies in the history of humanity. They are gone, and this is still alive. Remember that what is the secret of having a legacy and being still alive in the minds of millions and billions of people? Not just being alive, but having a vision that you share it with your grandsons and on and on and on. And now most of the world is holding to the same vision. That idea that the human being was created in the image of God, and therefore every human being has the right for self-determination, for freedom. Oh, we're not there yet, but oh, from 38, 37 centuries ago, we have advanced so much forwards. The ability of humans right now to have access to knowledge, and knowledge is the power, that without knowledge, without access to knowledge, you have no power to really arrive to self-determination or self-definition. So that in mind, we can move to the next, to the third concept, which is the concept of Acharit HaYamim, the end of days. So we read that in a, let us just start. We skip towards the end of the parasha. You have to remember that the Zohar commentary on Parashat Vayechi, although Parashat Vayechi is a very short parasha, I think it's the shortest parasha in the whole book of Genesis. It's made of less than 100 verses, if I'm not mistaken. Okay. It has 85 verses, which is like the shortest parasha in the book of Faith. But it has a whole volume in the Zohar. It's a whole volume. It's a whole volume in the Zohar of Parashat Vayechi, just about Vayechi. So there's a lot of stuff over here. So let us see what the Zohar is saying. As we said, Rashi, the Talmud, is saying, okay, Jacob wanted to tell about the end of days, and he forgot. Let us see. Okay, we read it in the Zohar of Perush HaSulam, verse 517. Be'ai shata de Yaakov karalon istalek minei shchinta. Va'u kmua. ותח הזה בשעה דיעקב אב הקרא לבנו הזדמנו אברהם ויצחק תמם, או שכינתה על גביו. שכינתה הווה חדי בי, ביעקב להתחברה באברהם, להתקשרה עם נפשיו כחד למעבר רתיחה. So, there's a happy opening. The same time that Jacob called, summoned his sons, the Shekhinah, the divine presence, had been removed for him. We already explained that. Come and see. Beshash Yaakov, when Jacob was calling his sons, Abram came over there, Isaac came over there, their souls, and the Shekhinah, the divine presence, came with them. So there were all three of them, Abram, Isaac, and Jacob, with the Shekhinah, all together. Vashekhinah itasmecha b'Yaakov, and the Shekhinah was rejoicing with Jacob, leitchaberim ha'avot, because the union, Jacob was leaving, and he was getting ready to unite with his father and his grandfather. Leitkasherim nafsham yachad liot merkava, to get their souls together, to become together the chariot that is called Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that chariot that is the key for every human being to connect to the tree of life. And therefore, it doesn't matter if you're Jewish or not. When you say that I believe in the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, and you really mean that, and you really want to connect your soul together with Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob to serve, to be a vessel to connect to the Creator's project of this reality, you're connected. This is what you need to be. This is where you need to be in. Therefore, also, if you're Jewish and you pray in the morning, and there's halacha, the law says that when you start the highest level of the prayer, which is Tfilat Amidah, the silent prayer. And how do you start? Blessed are you, God, Baruch Atah Hashem Elokeinu v'Elokei Avoteinu, our God and the God of and the Lord of our fathers, Elokei Avraham, the Lord of Abraham, Elokei Yitzchak, the Lord of Isaac, v'Elokei Yaakov, the Lord of Jacob. If you were not really focusing on that when you said that, you just said it by heart, you have to go back to the beginning. Because without that connection, you're not online. You're not really connected to the grid, which is called the tree of life, which is the main engine of life and tikkun and creativity and growth that finally will bring every human being towards the final completion. We were all created by one God in his image to reach our completion. If one human being would not reach completion, it's a problem from the creator, because if the creator is infinite, with infinite power, there's no way he created someone to fail the journey to reach completion. It's like each one of us was created to be the vessel of God's infinite light. If we don't get that light, it's not a problem with us, it's a problem with him. It's his problem. Therefore, there's no option. That's why it says it's in Samuel 2, 14, 14, Ki lo yidach mimeno nidach. No one can be cast away from him. Why? If he created you to be fulfilled as a creature of light, you will. Of course, you'll have to, you have the choice to fall, to rise, to fail, and to succeed. But in the long run, everyone must come to the finish line as a victory. So, Beshasha Patach Yaakov Amar, continuing the next. So that is an introduction to understand why do we have to know all of that and what does it mean the end of days. Beshasha Patach Yaakov Amar, as Jacob opened that connection and said, He has full gather, and I'll tell you what will happen to you at the end of days. What does it mean, the end of days? Acharit in Hebrew does not mean just the end. Acharit means also purpose. Acharit davar. It's the purpose, the completion. And that is the Shekhinah. The Shekhinah is where is that name of when humanity is reaching final completion. Shei Sof HaSefirot, this is the end of all the illuminations, of all the sefirot, all the emanations. When he said, I'll tell you what will happen to you at the end of days. Shehizkir et hagalut, at that time he remembered, which means he mentioned, you know, the end of days, you need to understand the exiles. Not just the ups, but also the downs. Natan atzvut bashchina. He injected sadness in the Shekhinah. Venistalka. And the Shekhinah had been gone away. The presence had been removed. Why? Because you cannot have the Shekhinah when you are sad. You cannot be sad and holy. You know, there are a lot of people that they pretend to be sad and holy, angry and holy, upset and holy. Doesn't go. This is an oxymoron. Holiness goes with happiness. The moment there is sadness, anger, there's no holiness. It's gone. It's removed. Don't let people to basically give you fake stories. Because when somebody's angry, he's not with the Shekhinah. When somebody's is sad, he's not with the Shekhinah. Oh, he has the right to be sad, but the Shekhinah cannot dwell. Jacob got sad when he realizes, the horrors of the exile, and he lost the Shekhinah at that moment. However, when his sons gathered, and all of them together said, Shema Israel, Hashem Elokeinu Hashem Echad, hear, O Israel, is one God, our God is one. The Shekhinah came back. Baruch Asher Amid Otah Yaakov, and then Jacob strengthened that when he said, Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto Leolam Vaed. That is what we say in the morning prayer and in the evening prayer, Shema Yisrael and Baruch Shem Kvod Malchuto Leolam Vaed, V'nityashva Shechina Bimkoma. And the Shechina is being settled in its place over Jacob and his sons. So why don't we read the prophecy about the end of days? Yes, we do. However, when you're being told secrets of highest power, you have to remember. If you tell it in a simple way, everybody can understand, even the ones who are not worthy of knowing it. So that's not a secret anymore. You have to encode it. Vayikra Yaakov. So we go a little bit before that. And Jacob called them. Ma'ikra kan, what he was calling over here. U'meshiv elakrei, the calling is lekayem et mekomam shi ha'malchut ha'mechona makom shi makriya shekram kasha otam b'shorsham. Jacob did not just call them, hey guys, come over. No, he basically connected them to their calling. 12 sons of Jacob, the fathers of the 12 tribes of Israel, who are basically the Merkavot, the chariots of the 12 signs of the zodiac, of the Shekhinah in the physical realm. Therefore, when they traveled later on in the desert and they camped, three tribes, the south, three to the north, three to the east, three to the west, and the Mishkan, the tabernacle in between, they created the chariot of the Shekhinah. So that allows humanity from that time on to rise above nature, to rise above our difficulties, to rise above all those issues in our life that force us to get stuck in the mundane, in the physical, in the illusion. So that was the calling of Jacob. He basically, over here, he's initiating them to be the chariots of the Shekhinah. So the two layers, Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, that's a higher level. Then we have, according to the Kabbalists, the 12 sons of Jacob. Then it extends to the 70 people that came with Jacob down to Egypt, and then to the 600,000 who participated in Mount Sinai. All these stages were about one thing: how to connect, how to establish that bridge of humanity between the dungeon of physical senses, physical consciousness, physical belief system, and achieve redemption, and redemption is only when we can be at both realities at the same time, in the physical and the spiritual, the metaphysical at the same time. Only when we reach that level, we will be redeemed. A lot of people think, oh, the Messiah will come and he will release us. So what do they think? The Messiah will, somebody will be stronger than all the bullies, than all the bad guys, and he's going to show them the real power of God, of justice and truth, and he's going to release us from all of those issues that bother us, injustice, inequality, and so on and so on and so forth. And everybody will be happy. This is not Mashiach, I'm sorry to tell you. This cannot happen only when humanity rises above its physical, mundane limitation. As long as we are stuck in the physical body, in the physical consciousness, it doesn't matter if Mashiach comes, and he's not coming this way. He cannot redeem you. The only person to redeem you is yourself alone. When humanity does that as a congregation, that is the end of days. This is Mashiach times. What Jacob is doing is not just telling us what will happen. He's giving us the power to achieve that, because we are the ones, all of us, who have to make that step forward. Mashiach is, again, is a clash of civilization, especially nowadays when we live in a civilization that is so materialistic, that it's spending so much energy in denial of anything spiritual. Yeah, a lot of people are against religion. And you know what? Religion of the Dark Ages did not really help a lot. The opposite is right. You know, when we are talking about religion of the Dark Ages, we're talking about they did everything possible to get people far away from God, because the God of religion of the Dark Ages is not the God you and me want to believe in. We don't want to believe in God that loves only few people and hates the rest of his creation. This is not God. This is a sick imagination of one human being. I'm sorry to say, like millions of human beings that really believe in a God like this. You know, he just loves me and my colleagues, and the rest of humanity is going to be burned in hell forever. This is not the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob. The God that created all of us and is responsible that all of us will reach total redemption and nobody will stay behind. So, what Jacob is doing over here is not telling us about what will happen. Who cares? And you know, if you're not there, you won't even be able to realize. He's giving us the power. And this force is basically shining generation after generation. This power is stronger than the greatest empires, because they ruled with the power of hatred, lust, greed, power, all those low emotions. That's why they rose and fell, rose and fell, brought horrible devastation and destruction, created huge creation on a physical level, and disappeared. But the creation of Jacob is still shining. So what kind of a message we have over here? Verse 523. Rabbi Yossi is asking Rabbi Shimon, what does it mean? Vagida o vayaged o vayagidu. What is this verb? Why using the verb vagida? Sounds like something. Haggadah, Passover Haggadah. What is about Passover Haggadah? So we learn that Passover Haggadah, it's Pesach. The name is Pesach. The Arizal, Rabbi Zakaria, is teaching us it's Pe, a mouth. Pe is also the number of verses of the parasha. 85 is Pe, a mouth. Sach is life. Sach is talking, but it's also 68, life, Chaim. Okay? During Passover Haggadah, we, Rabbi Zakaria is teaching us, when we say the words of the Haggadah, we pull from above the light of Chaya, the same light of Jacob and Moses, to bring down so we can generate an epiphany of awareness and perception on that night so we can have the taste of real true freedom, real true redemption. Redemption is not when the bad guys are thrown to Australia or to a dungeon. Redemption is when we don't believe in evil anymore. When we have strong faith that means a connection, that nothing can deter us from being who we're supposed to be, creating what we're supposed to create, and bringing humanity back together. That's called Haggadah, which is a secret of Sfirat Chochmah, the same level. And what does it say about Sfirat Chochmah? Ezehu Chacham, who is Chacham? Haroe et hanolad, the one who can see what's coming. This is the same level we are talking about. So Jacob is injecting that power in us every year in Parashat Vayichi. Verse 5:25. V'im tomar shelo gila ma sheratza lagalot. If you're going to say that he did not reveal what he wanted to reveal, im ken lama katuv b'Torah hadavar shel Yaakov ha'shelem? Why did he say that Jacob was complete? Be'et shenitkalkel achar kach ve'lo nishlam hadavar. Why did he say that he said, let's tell you what's going to happen to you with the end of the days? Never happened. Ela vaday shenishlam, of course, he did what he wanted to do. V'chol ma shetzach legalot gila v'satam, whatever he wanted and needed to reveal, he did reveal. However, he concealed it so only the worthy people can get it. Amar davar v'gila lachutz v'satam bifnim. Whatever he said, he revealed and concealed at the same time. V'davar shebatorah eino mitkalkel l'olam, and nothing in the Torah will ever or can never be spoiled. V'hakol hu satum b'Torah, everything is hidden in the Torah. Mishum sh'Torah hi shlemut hakol, the Torah is the completion, the complete concentrated wisdom of the whole creation, all in one book. It's complete above and it's complete below. Ve'en milah ot b'Torah sh'tihyeh pguma. There's no word, there's no letter that is not complete. Yaakov kol ma she'ya tzech lomar amar. Jacob said exactly what he wanted to say. However, he concealed it so we can receive and understand from it only what we are capable to understand without destroying the goal. So let us try to reveal some of that stuff. Because all the prophecies are there in this parasha, and we'll just do one of them. And it's the one that he said before. When he's blessing, before he's blessing the sons of Joseph, he's saying something. And what is he saying? Saying many things about the redemption. And in the redemption, he's saying, I'm just trying, there's so many of them. First of all, when he's saying, when I came from Paddan Aram, Rachel died because of me in Bethlehem. Why is that? And the Zohar is asking, why is he saying that? Why Joseph doesn't know that? He was there with Jacob and Rachel when Rachel died while giving birth to Benjamin. Why is he saying that? No, that was a prophecy, says the Zohar. And he's speaking about the exile. He's speaking about the exile of the Israelites going to many, many nations around the world. He's speaking about the war of Amalek, fighting the Amalek. And I spoke about it in other times. He's speaking about something very amazing. This is a commentary of the Rabbi Avraham Azulay. He's asking the question, why is it when he's saying that he's speaking about the children of Joseph? In a way that he's hinting, when he's speaking about your sons that were born to you in the land of Egypt, this is Zohar verse 73. And he's talking about the nation of Israel while they are in captivity, exiling among the nations around the world. Because the land of Egypt is a symbol for all exiles. So we learn, Amar Rabbi Yossi, said Rabbi Yossi, Israel, Shiyu Beretz Israel, HaKdoshah, Yoshvim Baretz, Be'et Shevo HaMashiach. When Mashiach comes, there will be already a lot of people from the nation of Israel living in Israel. There will be a lot of them living among the nations. And there's a difference between the ones when Mashiach comes who are living in Israel and the ones who are living outside Israel. At that messianic age. And there's an amazing thing about in Chesed LeAvraham of Rabbi Avraham Azulay. He wrote this book in Gaza in the 16th century. And he said, when Mashiach comes, when the Messiah is coming, he will be studying with everybody. However, with the Israelis, the ones, which means the ones who were in Israel before he came, he will be flying with them to the Garden of Eden to study. While the Jews who come from the exiles after Mashiach comes, they won't be able to fly. So those who came to Israel after Mashiach comes will come to the Mashiach and ask, why can't we fly with you to the Garden of Eden to study with the Israelis? And the Mashiach said, you know very well that one of the reasons you stayed outside Israel was because you said living in Israel is too hard. Yes, it will be harder to live in Israel, fighting the wars, living in a country that is attacked all the time, that making a living is harder than in America or in Europe or other places. Yes. But because the people who stayed in Israel, they preferred to stay in Israel and overcome the hardship and still stay in Israel. They stayed in Israel because they were strong enough to overcome their body needs to have it easy outside Israel. And because the body weighs less because their victory, they are capable of flying to the Garden of Eden. But you guys, says Mashiach to the Olim Chadashim, to the Jews who make Aliyah to Israel after he comes, you stayed outside. You stayed where it's comfortable in America, in Europe, in Australia, in other places. Your bodies are too heavy. You didn't overcome the body difficulty, the weight of the body. You prefer the comfort. And therefore, your bodies are too heavy and you can't fly your bodies up to the Garden of Eden. Just to give you a hint about how Jacob is simply telling what's going to be. And more than that. We don't have time to all of that, but the most fascinating and most moving part is verse 81 and on. Vani bevoi mipadan Aram et alai Rachel baderech. As we said, when I came from Aram, Padan Aram, Rachel died on the road. And here is the quote from Jeremiah 31, one of the most famous psukim verses in the whole in all the prophecies. Ko amar Hashem kol berama nishma. So said God, a voice is being heard. Rachel mevaka et baneha. Rachel crying for her sons. And then God is answering her crying. Ko amar Hashem min'i kolech mibechi. God says, you know, stop your voice from crying and your eyes from tearing. Ki yesh sachar lefu'olatech, because there's a reward for your action. Veshavu banim legvulam, and your sons came back to their place. And the Zohar says, "V'lo amar v'yashuvu." Doesn't say they will come back. They came back. Why? Why in past tense and not in future tense? And the answer is like this: this is not telling something that is going to happen. This is a promise. This is a vow. It's a vow that's saying, from God's point of view, they already came back. You don't cry because they came back already. I'm giving a vow. It's like it's done deal. When Meshiv Boren is answering, verse 82. Amar Bilazar, Besha shehadin al hahar, when the judgment will come and over the mountain. Vashchinat itater el hahar. And the Shekhinah will crown the mountain. Danu shetekabel shamuchin. It's all code words about the Shekhinah must receive the ability, the power of thinking of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob as a whole, all the nation and the whole world, in order to be able to accept and welcome Mashiach. As that process is happening, which means the upgrading of the consciousness of the people of Israel and the rest of the world, and that will be a very hard process. And the Shekhinah is feeling like her children will be killed in the judgment, in the wars. And it's not going to be like this. And this Vasodu. And the secret is Zuroni Akara lo yalada pitzchi rina v'tzali. Lamadnu, we learn already. Rabim yu bnei hakiseh min bnei ha'atzma. V'az teshuv hashchina lebaala b'yom ahu Hashem echad u'shmo echad. It will look like the whole Israel is going to fall apart and destroyed. We had that already a few times in the last few decades, especially lately. However, that is not the story. It's going to be very hard. So when it says, Shavu banim legvulam, and your sons came back to their place, the sons came back already from the hateful land. They're already redeemed in the past tense, because from God's point of view, it's already happened. And answer it, and then it continues. So when it says like Israel, Israel is also a name of that level that the Shekhinah has to co attach to in order to the world achieve and experience redemption. Why Jacob has to tell that? Because when we come, Kshenavom in Geulat Israel, when we come back to the land of Israel, the Shekhinah will wake up. And there will be a war with the nations. V'yamutu mehem Yisrael, and there will be dead. A lot of people will die in over the war coming back to Israel. It won't be like a simple, easy. It's not going to happen in an instant. It's going to be gradual, slowly, slowly. First, when we're talking about the 18th century, even the 15th, 16th century, we see the blooming of Jewish communities, Rabbi Zachariah, Rabbi Yosef Karo, in Tzfat. It starts in Tzfat. Tzfat, Gematria, Sha'ar, numerical value of the gate. Starting from Tzfat, the blooming, the golden age of Tzfat in the 16th century. But then it slows down. And then in the 18th century, you see the Jewish communities are starting to flourish in Tzfat, and then in Jerusalem. And then the mid 19th century, the Jews are already the majority in Jerusalem. Okay? And that continues. And then towards the end of the 19th century, the first new Jewish villages like Petah Tikva and the other Moshavot are starting to be built, and Jerusalem is starting to flourish all over again. And then slowly, slowly, and then after the Balfour Declaration and the San Remo conference, in which the United League, the League of Nations, internationally declare to reinstate the Jewish homeland in the land of Israel. In 1920, April 1920. So from that moment on, Israel is dedicated by the international law only for the nation state of the Jews. And it says very clearly, all other nations living in the land of Israel, Palestine, as they call it in English, in foreign language, they have only personal rights. Only the Jews have national rights over that country. Okay? Was that easy? No. More wars and more wars and more massacres. And finally, we see as the Zohar is saying, V'itkavu le'at le'at lavo el ha'aretz. And they will get closer, slowly, slowly, to take over the land. So more land and more land. And more land. And as the Zohar is saying, so in 47, half of the country was allocated to the Jewish nation in the United Nations Assembly 181. But the other side did not accept it, so it has no validity. But still, there was a war. 6,000 Israelis were killed in that war, 1% of the population. Okay, that's a lot. Okay, so Israel was established only on part of the land. And then 67, Israel was forced to attack back Egypt and Jordan, and then the land grew. And then, and also the Golan Heights, and it's growing and growing because, as the Zohar says, Le'at, Le'at, in Hebrew, in Aramaic, it says, Bizer le'meitera, like small steps. Moving forward. And as that happens, the Shekhinah will be crying for all of those soldiers and people that will die in the acts of terror and war. V'yamutu mehem Yisrael b'milchama. Yomar l'Kadosh Baruch Hu she'ibocha. And then the Shekhinah will be crying for the losses, and God will say, do not cry for your children that die. Don't be afraid. Al tefachadi, sachar yesh lahem labanim shemetu. All those who die on the slow continuing war over the land of Israel, over achieving the messianic consciousness, they die on the name of God. The one who didn't die will come back in reincarnation, and the one who died will come back in the resurrection. So when it says, Meta alai Rachel, Rachel died for me and because of me, it's about the unity, the connection to the name of God. The whole war in Israel is exciting, the whole world, the whole world. It's like everything that happens in Israel, the whole world is upset about it. You know, you have wars with thousands, hundreds of thousands, millions of people killed all over the planet. You don't have the headlines like in Israel. Why? Because this war is the war about showing the world the name of God, the God of Abraham, Isaac, and Jacob, till the whole world finally will get that state of mind and redemption will be achieved. This is the story. Thank you. Good luck. We're in the midst of that war, in one of the most crucial stages, and be on the right side. Thank you.